Hey friends, it's your pal Mike Shea from Sly Flourish, here with another episode of Sly Flourish's Lazy GM Prep. In this weekly show, I go through steps from Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master while preparing for my Sunday D&D game. In this case, I am running Scarlet Citadel, a hardcover adventure written by Kobold Press for 5th edition. Really fun adventure, and I'm really enjoying it. This show, like all of the work of Sly Flourish, is brought to you by the patrons of Sly Flourish. If you enjoy the work that I do here, and you want access to the City of Arches sourcebook, and Uncovered Secrets Volume 1 and 2, and a whole bunch of exclusive adventures, and a dedicated Discord channel, and a monthly Patreon Q&A, you can become a patron of Sly Flourish. The price is very reasonable. You can find a link for that in the show notes below. To the patrons of Sly Flourish, thank you so much for your continuing support. I was left a little flat-footed last game, because I discovered something which we're going to talk about a lot today, which is that a lot of these areas, the Dwarven Barracks, they're actually like one big level. So they kind of have this top view map of Scarlet Citadel. And I can recognize, we know what level zero is. Level one's the shrine. Then this is the library. Then this is the Dwarven area. And then it gets down to the caves. But the way you get to the caves is, like, you can, you know, one of the issues that you have with a sort of mega dungeon that has a lot of different vertical connections is the characters could jump an entire level and you're not really ready to go to that level. That didn't happen in the last episode, but in my last session, but it could have. And actually where they are now isn't actually, I don't think I have to worry too much about it, because they ended up backtracking, which worked out really well. So I suppose we should talk about what happened. Let's pull up my notes. Let's look at the last session. So in the last session, they were inside the town of Red Tower. They went down to the Temple of the Weird Weaver. And they saw, it was a fun, strong start. It worked out really well, which is there's this giant icosahedron floating up above an obelisk. That very icosahedron they were looking at was now hundreds of years old, but it was the same as the icosahedron that the characters had pulled out of the forge, the arcane forge in level two of Scarlet Citadel, and then thrown back in time to a bunch of elves and said, deal with this. And the elves ended up dealing with it by building a temple to the Weird Weaver underneath the town. So the characters inadvertently created the very place. It was really fun when things work out like that. You know, you never know how things are going to work out like that. And it worked out really well, and that was fun. So they're looking at the icosahedron, realizing it's the same one that they had in their hands. And then all of a sudden, the icosahedron stops moving. Like, it's spinning and spinning and spinning, and it stops moving. And as it does, there's an earthquake, a big earthquake that cracks along the walls, and then it stops. They all almost fall over, and then they're fine. And then it starts spinning again. And they're talking to the NPC who's there, and they're talking to everybody that's there. And what they realize is that, like, the ley lines, and I gave this away. There's a whole thing in the adventure that talks about how there's, like, multiple ley lines that are all being kind of drawn to this place, and that's a big dark secret. I'm like, well, I think I'm going to reveal that secret now. So they learn that there are a bunch of ley lines, which are sort of these, like, stretched elastic bands that are sort of connecting worlds together, and they were used by the elves to allow travel between places and to draw energy from places, and then they were abandoned by the elves, and now they're out there, and the agents that are working in the Scarlet Citadel have learned how to twist these ley lines. The Scarlet Citadel itself and past people in the ley lines have learned how to twist these ley lines to draw lots of energy into the Scarlet Citadel and use that energy, and there are now four agents that have been using that energy to do dastardly things. And if they stop these, they can restore the balance of the ley lines in the Crossroads region. But every time they do one, the other ones start to snap around in place, and it actually makes things a little bit more chaotic. So they have sort of a timer where, like, they have to kind of do this because it's getting more and more, you know, it's getting worse and worse. So that gave them a good, strong, like, hey, you got to deal with these. And they know the people that are dealing with them. They know the main villains that are dealing with them. And it's Kagoth Z, the Twister of Time. They've already defeated one of them. They defeated the Alchemist Lady. She was one of them. Kagoth Z, the Twister of Time, is another one. Immorta the Debased, the Disciple of Gellert, is a third. And then Gellert the Gruesome himself is a fourth. And they are, so there's, I think the way I'm kind of building it is, each of those people have their own icosahedron, which contains this piece of the Weird Weaver, this chaos, this element of chaos. And they've channeled the energy, but in doing so, they've sort of removed the chaos that should be kind of inherent in that strength in the ley lines. And while they're trying to harness this, they're twisting the ley lines. And the longer they twist them, the more damage they cause until this land could end up turning into the Wasted West. Right. If you look at the Wasted West, you can they already know. And they learned about the Wasted West because they met the Dust Goblins who had kind of teleported from the Wasted West. So I think that could definitely be a factor. What else? So they had that strong start. Then they spent a little bit more time in Red Tower. And then they had to make a choice, which is, well, who are we going after? And they said, do we want to go after? We already have been dealing with Khagath Zee. So they now have two different ways to get into Scarlet Citadel, which is really cool. They have a secret tunnel, a secret stairwell that's in a dwarven tomb, a dwarven cemetery, like a long forgotten dwarven cemetery. They found out that there is a staircase that leads from that dwarven cemetery all the way down to level 3. So they can skip level 0, 1, and 2. But they are like, well, but if we go all the way down to level 3, we have to find out how to make our way back to level 2 again, because we ended up in level 3 because we got teleported with a time ball. They got hit with a time ball and teleported. So maybe we don't go to level 3. Maybe instead we should go back to level 1. By the way, it should be totally clear now because we kill everybody there. So I'm sure it should be totally fine. And I'm like, oh, of course, it's totally fine. So then they said, okay, we're going to do that. So they made their way back to the ruins of level 0. And there they met one of the NPCs, Ushlux, the worshiper of Karen. And she's there. She had dealt with them before, and they're like, aren't you like a bad person? Like, we thought that you sent us to die. And she's like, well, I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And it turns out you survived. So, and she's there with a couple of bone golems. She has these big, powerful bone golems that she has created by doing undead. And she's like, yeah, everything should be fine. So they're like, okay, well, we're going to go down there. She's like, all right, well, you know, good talking to you. And she says, if you ever manage to find out, there's metaphorically the streams of Charon are down there. And I'm very curious if you can find the streams of Charon. What they don't know is there's actually the river Styx flowing through the bottom of this place. And nobody really knows that except the people that are sitting on it. So that is really interesting. And so she's like, hey, look, if you can find out more about that, I'd really like to know. So she's sort of this NPC that can offer information. But she, of course, didn't tell, oh, by the way, level 1 is completely overrun with undead now. She forgot to mention that fact. So they go downstairs and they're like getting ready. And then their skeleton wanders up. And they're like, oh, man, look at that. There's a skeleton. So they shoot the skeleton that dies. And then they're like, uh-oh, there's more skeletons. And then they're fighting more skeletons. And then there's like swarms of skeletons. So I used the skeletons from the level up 5e monstrous menagerie. Let's see the table of contents here. Skeletons. Last week, I was angry with Wizards of the Coast. And so one of my petty revenges was to use only sources that were not Wizards of the Coast, including the skeletons. But it turned out that was really useful because they have really great skeletons in here. Really, they have more skeletons in this than they did before. And they have a skeleton. They have the skeletal champion, which is great. I love having a skeletal champion. Right? That's something I really miss. But then they have this, the skeletal horde. Now, I've been working with horde rules for a long time, and I've always been kind of like, how do you run multiple skeletons? But I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'll just try this out. I have it. And it's really good. So the skeleton horde kind of count. I think they say, does it say like how many skeletons are in a skeletal horde? It's a large group of medium. Yeah, 5 or more skeletons, right? The horde. So you see like a big pile of skeletons, right? And it has AC 13, same as a regular skeleton. 65 hit points because it's a different one. Has a bloodied condition. And if it hits for 27 damage if it hits you. So you could actually run multiple skeletons. I ended up, I think, splitting that damage into a couple of attacks. I don't think having just one attack at +4, that's, you either take 27, you take 0, seems a little swingy to me. So I was like, how about you split that into 2 attacks for 13 damage each? And that worked better. And that way they had something they could fight. And that worked out really well. And so they fought a bunch of skeletons. And then they realized, oh man, there's also like wraiths and specters that are free here. You know, and I was using these tokens. Look at the art. That's really good art. So there are wraiths and specters here as well. And they're like, okay, well, we need to get the hell out. So they bravely ran away and made their way down to level 2. So they just kind of like, we know we're going to get overrun with skulls. So now they know that like the barrier that was blocking off the undead section of level 1 has broken. And now the undead are making their way through level 1. So it's kind of cool. Like the dungeon is changing. Things are different now than they were. That's really neat. So they ran their way down to level 1. To level 2, and now they're making their way through level 2. They've also seen that like level 2 is now getting overrun by big oozes. If we recall from a while ago, managed to release a giant ooze, then they released this like blood ooze thing that eats other organic stuff, and they left that in this big chamber, which is now the entire chamber is filled with this ooze, and bits of the woman that they killed also got absorbed into it. So now there's like, I don't even know what's in there yet. But I know that every doorway that leads into this place is now seeping with this like red gooey liquid that's trying to get out. And every so often tendrils like reach out from it. And they're like, yeah, we don't want to deal with it. But they've essentially created this like huge blob that is also might have the personality of the woman that they killed on level two. So there's a good argument. Like, are they actually making the world a better place or not? So there's this good question of whether or not they're making the world a better place or not. And that's kind of fun. But they, you know, and then also like you want to show that the place is changing, but I also don't want it to like get in the way of them making progress. So they made their way down here. They saw they threw some rations at these two like weird green slimes, and the green slimes went to eat their rations. They made their way past there, came up to this hall. They knew that like, okay, in here is weird stuff. We know that Kagaz spends his time there. We're not going to go there. So they made their way down to here. And went to this chamber. And I was excited for this because there's an NPC in here I really wanted to have revealed. And that NPC is Les Baskalag, the Infernal Tutor. And this is really the strong start. So we should, why don't we get our notes? Why don't we actually start prepping our game? All this talk. As always, I am using Notion to do my campaign planning. If you are interested in how to use Notion for campaign planning for D&D, you can find a link about Notion in the show notes below. We are going to generate a new session. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm a lot happier today than I was 2 days ago. 29 January 3, Sunday, Scarlet Citadel. We have a couple players who are out today, and I don't remember who. I know Juliet is out, and I think Sharon might be out. So we'll find out. So Bart is a Gearforged diplomat bard. So I did ask him like why he wanted to go down there. And he gave me an answer. I hope I wrote it down. He was drawn and compelled to come down here. He doesn't know exactly what drew him, but something is pulling him down here. And I don't know what. And maybe, I don't know what it is. And maybe, I don't know. There could be a, you know, this idea. So he is drawn. So I want to make sure to tug on that. I don't think I need to tug on it right away, but I want to make sure that there is a reason why he's coming down. Maybe the final icosahedron is sort of the thing that will complete him. Like maybe he is the weird weaver. Wouldn't that be interesting? I don't know. There could be some fun here. Maybe, or he is a vessel of the weird weaver or something like that. There could be something kind of fun about that. So We'll consider that. Dorne Greycastle, played by Joe, is a shade who is trying to get back to his normal self. He doesn't know exactly what that means, but he knows he's not where he should be, and he thinks he should be somewhere else, but he doesn't know what that is. He has felt a draw to both, you know, regular healthy undead healthy dead worlds, but also felt this draw to the Dustlands, which is like the realm of the undead. So there's something there. Garble is a folk rogue far traveler who has traveled down to Scarlet Citadel to find a new realm for his people. Other ones. He met other mushroom folk in another period of time who called him a jerk and then sent a shambling mound after him. So he was like, oh, not all mushroom folk are friends. Mez, played by Sharon, I don't know if she's going to be here today. I can't remember. She is a frost elf fighter who is basically trying to make sure that Dorne and the body that Dorne inhabits is maintained enough to be able to go to a good dead place. Malarkey Jones, played by Jerry, is a tiefling warlock cleric follower of the Weird Weaver who just kind of follows chaos, and it drew her down here. And then we have Skrinks Gibbard, played by Juliet, a rat folk wizard occultist, but she's not there as well. So hello there. We'll do the Obi-Wan Kenobi. Hello there, says Las Galag. So they meet Las Baskalag, the lesser infernal tutor from Tome of Beast 3, page 120. So Las Baskalag is an infernal tutor. So I'm changing this. So I think it was just like a spine devil in the book, but I was like, oh no, we want to do something cooler than that. So we have the infernal tutor who hunched wizened creature's sallow skin stretched tightly over its bones and covered an infernal script, cunning and cruel, eyes shining a little too brightly beneath a forehead adorned with small horns. I like that. We're going to take that flavor text and we're going to paste it right in to my strong start. Man, I got lost. There we go. Hello there. Oh, that didn't. Let's try. I have my line breaky thing. Remove line breaks. Paste the text. Look at that. Copy that. But I want to get the a cunning and cruel eyes. Cunning eyes. We're not going to say cruel. Cruel. That's a little too. That's just mean. Cunning. Cunning eyes. So cool. So they meet this new NPC, and Les Baskalag has lots of things he could probably share. So we can kind of jump down to our secrets and clues and say what are the things we know they're going to meet Les Baskalag. It's the strong start. So what do we want? What are some of the things that Les Baskalag would know? Well, we know that Khagath Z. Actually, who would have summoned Les Baskalag? Maybe not Khagath Z, because he's a time dude. He probably doesn't know. It could be Ineska, by the way, was the name of the master of oozes, who's now become a big ooze. So there's Immorta the Debased could have done it. I think that would be right. She looks like the kind of person that would summon a devil, right? Look at her. She's mean. So Immorta the Debased summoned Les Baskalag. When? How far back? A few years ago, to serve Gellert. They tired of him and gave him to Khagath Les Baskalag. We're gonna abbreviate that. Les Baskalag can what? Can teach all sorts of otherworldly information, but seeks a price in return. And what price does he want? So he definitely wants his freedom right now. Wants to be free of his summoning circle. And he can offer information in return. The sources of power, each a piece of the Weird Weaver, doesn't always have to be the same thing. In fact, one of the pieces is a creature of itself, something terrible and otherworldly, shambling below, devouring anything it can. So let's take another little look at the Infernal Tutor's sort of motivations and stuff like that. Despicable Fiend poses teachers and mentors, sometimes killing the known sage and taking their place, willing to dole out wisdom to the worthy that seek their guidance, yet all the while they lure their pupils into corruption. While all devils trade in souls, Infernal Tutors gain their greatest satisfaction corrupting mortals who are seeking self-improvement. Ooh. So he might want... Infernal Tutors teach in remote and inaccessible places, such as forbidding mountaintops. Calculating and patient, implement their schemes with vast and deliberate patience. Those that question or rebel against their teachings are simply released from their tutelage. So one fun thing might be if there's a lesser Infernal Tutor and there's a greater Infernal Tutor, CR 13. I don't know which one they would fight. 17, 182, that's pretty hard. And I think they're like fourth level still. 3 claw attacks, 12 plus 14 psychic. That's, 26 damage with 3 attacks. It might be fun if they could bring Les Baskalag with them in an item of some sort. I love putting like entities in items and letting them carry in items. That way they don't have like an NPC that's following around. So maybe there'd be an opportunity to have them basically have him in go into an item. So we'll look at magic items and see if there's like a magic item that he could turn himself into so that they could carry him around with them. And then they've got this walking around this tutor. So I think what he says is like, I just, I want to be free of here. So Les Baskalag, Les wants to be free of his prison and would like to accompany the characters on their journey. He's tired of Gellert and his cronies and would like to help somebody new. I love the idea that he's going to pull all these like self-help platitudes, like just believe in yourself and you can do anything. And we'll get to like what he's going to do. So they'd seen his meeting. So we'll go back to like what we're actually going to do in today's session. So they're going to start by talking with Les Baskalag, then probably face Gellert or face Khagath, then probably make their way back down to level 3 and work their way to find Immorta's relic of the Weird Weaver. And I have to figure out what that is, where she kept that, as they navigate their way through level 3. And I think that probably is going to be enough for today's session, as far as, they're going to have to go through all the chambers of level 3. The trick with a character like Les Baskalag is you don't want him to know so much that they just blow the whole thing. I think it's safe to say that Gellert is trying to draw so much power that he's almost certainly going to rip the crossroads apart if left unchecked. Les Baskalag was like, I warned him, but he just wouldn't listen. Dvengar says, yeah, so Lass might become your own lore delivery system. That is why I love tag-along NPC intelligent magic items, because they don't get in the way. They don't get turns. You don't have to worry about where they are when you get fireballed. That they're an item that the characters can carry around that spews lore. If I'm playing the game God of War, I finish God of War, and I'm just kind of probably the first couple of hours of God of War Ragnarok. And there's a great NPC that is a talking head that our hero Kratos carries around. I forget the name of the head. Somebody, I'm sure, can remember the name of the head in Discord. And, you know, he has this talking head that he carries around on his belt. And, you know, whenever, and it's the smartest, smartest of the gods, or smartest man on earth, they call him. And he knows all this stuff. And he's a great, like, way for the characters to sort of interact with things. And, you know, it's perfect. So, yeah, it's a great, great trick. You really want a good trick for, like, how to handle tag along NPCs are a pain in the ass, but magic items, intelligent magic items are fantastic tag along NPCs. Mimir, that's right. Yeah, Savage Stalker, remember. Mimir is the name of the talking head. Thank you for that, Savage Stalker. You get a free wild card on your Sly Flourish bingo card. And yeah, it's just a fantastic way to do it. So I would definitely like to do that. We're going to leave the other secrets for now. So NPCs, we have Lass Baskalag, and we have Kagoth. Those are two. We might get some other ones here. Deadly Encounter Benchmark. I think we're gonna have four characters today. They're fourth level. Is that right? I don't think they're fifth level yet. Oh, you know what? I think I put it in the thing. That said. Yeah, they're fourth level. Poor bastards. They really need to get to fifth level. So that puts the CR at four. They're not supposed to be able to handle challenges higher than four, but boy, they often do. That Deadly Encounter benchmark is pretty high. And I think, so for monsters, Kagoth Z has a lot of clockwork things. So let's go down to our creatures database, and we're going to look for clockworks. And I think I used Clockwork Huntsman. We can sort by. So Clockwork Soldiers are pretty good. We have Clockwork Pugilist. That's pretty funny. I wonder what they're like. Big boxing robots. Yeah, like a boxing robot. When a creature within 5 feet of the pugilist is targeted by a ranged attack, the pugilist steps in the way and the ranged attack or target hits the pugilist instead. Two fist attacks. 10 feet, it makes one fist attack. If it hits, the target takes an extra. These pugilists are kind of funny. They look kind of fun. Boxing, rock'em sock'em robots. Not a lot of hit points. That's all right. The soldiers from the Codex. And I think I used Huntsman before, and they're in Tome of Beasts, page 63. Let's take a look at those guys. Yeah, I think, the Huntsman, 110 hit points at CR3. Yikes. Tome of Beasts monsters are mean, but you can always cut their hit points. They only get one attack, right? Plus 5 to hit, 7 damage. It's so weird. It's a weird monster. Very high in defense, very low in attack. I think we might go with the Pugilists. I like the Pugilists. They have some fun things. They do two attacks for 6 points, so they do some decent damage. They have some kind of like, they run around and punch stuff. The Brass Onslaught is kind of fun. So I think we will go with those guys. Let's go to my Scarlet. Let's see. We'll go here and here. And what we will do, I'm going to open. This is Tome Beast 3. And that is Page Clockwork Pugilist. So what I do for the, so we're going to say Clockwork Pugilist. We open that guy up. Go down in here, and we paste the stat block. So now we have the Clockwork Pugilist with a stat block ready to go. And then in here, hopefully I can, look at that. If I click on it, I get the full stats of the Clockwork Pugilist. Yay. And then we have Kagoth Z, who is in the book. I'm probably not going to worry about putting the stat block in there right now. Do I already have the stat block for him? I have a picture of him. And I don't know. He is just a mage. So I think we can just use the mage stat block. I think it's under NPCs, non-player characters, mages. So here is the mage. This works pretty well. This could be Kagoth Z. I could just fit that stat block in. Oh, I'm like one line too long. So we will grab the mage stat block, save that in my clipboard. Go back in here, and we're actually going to put him in the database, and I don't want to do that. Oh God, what'd I do? And so now I have a stat block for Kagoth Z. He has initiative of, so his type is, Humanoid. AC is 12. I think 15 because he's going to have mage armor. Max hit points is 67. And initiative, the nit roll is going to be 12. It's 2 on initiative. And encounter, we're going to create a new encounter called Kega. And he's part of that encounter. Now we're going to go to my pugilist. We're going to duplicate this guy. And we're going to open, let's see. We will say put encounter so we know that it's for encounter. We put him in the Kagasi encounter. And how many of those guys? 4? They're pretty low on hit points. So I think 4 is not unreasonable. Then we go to our encounter combat tracker. And we already did this guy. I actually did it on the fly, so I can delete that one. Actually, we just renamed this one. So we could say Kagoth encounter. And what do we do here? We're going to filter by encounter contains. And now we have those. Now we have to do the same thing for the characters. Oh, look, there are. Oh, yeah, we already have the characters in there. Because I think I said the characters are always in there. I think that's the other filter rule, right? And or type equals character. So that works. Okay. I'll worry about dicking with that later. What else do we need? I still have some secrets and clues to follow out. So the other one is to figure out, so level 3. I don't really need to build up fantastic locations because it's on the book, so we're just going to delete that section. Monsters have got my pugilist, but monsters are going to be in the encounter, so I don't need to worry about that. I do want to worry about treasure because I want to come up with a magic item that we can put Last Baskalag in. So that's important. Why don't we do that right now? Because we know that that's going to happen. So I think, does Dorne have a magic weapon? He has a broken sword hilt with a single use, but he doesn't have anything else. So he might, I think he would really like a magic sword. So let's go to our random tables here. And we're just going to pick item, Midgard, and we'll do deep magic spells. And we're really, so I think we're going to give a +1 sword. It's going to be kind of like whatever sword he wants. Glimpse of the Void. That sounds fun. What's that? 8th level. Force images of terror and non-existence upon each creature in a 30-foot cube centered on a point. Must make an intelligence saving throw. Failed save, the creature goes insane for the duration. While insane, the creature takes no actions other than a shriek. Ugh. That's too much. Glimpse of the Void is kind of fun. Targeting foreknowledge. Oh, see? 3rd level. Twisting the knife, slapping the butt of a spear, slashing out as you recover from a lunge. Countless other double strike maneuvers are skillful ways to get more from your weapon. By casting the spell as a bonus action after making a successful melee weapon attack, you deal an extra 2d6 damage to the weapon's type. In addition, if your weapon attack roll was a 19 or higher, it is a critical hit and increases the weapon's damage threshold. The extra damage from the spell is not increased. So it's a bonus action, it's instantaneous, it just does it on the one attack. Right? By casting this spell as a bonus action, that's weird, after making a successful melee attack. How does that, I don't think that's supposed to be how that works. But I think that idea is not bad. The targeting foreknowledge. So we're going to have to modify that spell a little bit because that doesn't work as is. But I think the idea of a weapon, so +1 weapon of foreknowledge. Once per day, the person attuned to the weapon can use a bonus action to gain foreknowledge on their next successful hit. Gain foreknowledge for 1 minute, right? Or until they successfully hit with a melee weapon attack. On their next successful hit, weapon melee attack, they gain +2d6 weapon damage, and a 19 or 20 is a critical hit. I'm going to go, I think it'd be even better at 18 to 20. You want to see that happen. So that's pretty good. This comes back after a long, after at the next dawn. I like dusk. It comes back in the next dusk because it's sinister. Last Baskalag's +1 weapon of foreknowledge. And it talks to him. All right, there's a fun magic item. That's good. Let's throw some other, I think the book's got magic items. So we're not going to worry about other magic items because I'm pretty sure there's stuff in the book. I don't need my scratch pads anymore because I use the other encounter thingy. The other one is like when I run battles over Owlbear, I will write in, I can put initiative and stuff like on it. I can actually track damage. I can add these guys to initiative. So I don't really need to use the combat tracker so much, but it's nice to have. Let's take a look. So let's go back into Scarlet Citadel and I sure wish I hadn't gotten rid of the toolbar. We're going to get that toolbar back. I always hated the toolbar. Now I was like, oh, it's really handy. So we're going to get the toolbar. And we can go to table contents and we can go to Dwarven Barracks, level 3. So I have read through a lot of the Dwarven Barracks. There's a bunch of Trollkin. They're going to get to level 5 when they defeat Khagath Zee. So it's really a good idea to kill Khagath Zee and get to level 5 because they need it. They're just getting their asses handed to them all the time. Lich Hounds, Trollkin Reavers, Trollkin Shaman, Grunts, Dire Owlbears are in there. So that's fun. This is the left-hand side of the dungeon, which if we go to our maps here, that's this map, which I think has both halves on it. Yeah. So they have not been to the right hand of this. And it's that lower left corner over here that I think leads to the next big map. So I'm going to play it by ear. One complaint I have about Scarlet Citadel is, I think I've mentioned it before, it's really wordy. It is not an adventure written to help DMs reference stuff in the middle of play, I can say. This is kind of neat that 316 has the, I think it has like a secret passageway that leads to the Oubliette. So that's kind of neat. I wonder what that staircase is in 317. Let's take a look at that. The stable. There's a rope ladder that leads through a hole called the drop. Oh, that's there. Yeah. Interesting. So Darrow could use that for their surface rates. But what about that staircase? Right, so this is the stable where the owlbears are. But what's that stair? See that staircase? What's that staircase about? Where does that go? It seems like it didn't go anywhere. The hole drops 80 feet in the back caverns below. It's the only way for the characters to reach the lower levels or get out again until they find other means from below. But then what's that crumbled area in the right? So maybe that is the... Figuring this place out. Oh, 318. Okay. 318. This tunnel was carved up by the dwarves and dire owlbears long ago. Dark, narrow, twisted, nearly 3/4 mile long, and emerges in an overgrown jumble of boulders somewhere in the southeast of the ruined citadel. Dire owlbears use the tunnel to travel to and from the surface for hunting. The troll can sometimes use it for the same reason. So that's cool. So there's another exit to the surface. There's two different ways to reach the surface here. And that way they don't have to take that other passageway. That's kind of interesting. Is that good? Do we need two different ways? I mean, I guess that's like how the owlbears go. A sturdy door set into the south wall of the tunnel, a couple dozen paces beyond this chamber, lead to area 319 in the cackling caverns. And so that's this area. So where is 319? Oh, this way, right? So there is a way to get down to the cackling caverns. It's confusing. Confusing perspectives. So one important question that I've got is where has Immorta kept her... Where is her Weird Weaver connection? So probably pretty low. So the back caverns. So the back caverns, I think they've seen 403. The Kamazots. I like 410. That looks awesome. It's Shrine to Kamazots. This is where the Darrow, and you can have two different kind of Darrow places. Oh, a fungus farm. See? I really need to dig. I've read through this, but I forget. So there's Immorta, the base. Prisoner's Quarters. It's where Immorta the Debased is. And Immorta's Chambers. That's probably where she's hanging out. Or where she's kept her. That's 418. Yeah. So her Weird Weaver thing might be there. Friends, I'm going to take a quick break. I will be right back. Please let folks know that I will be returning shortly. I will be back in a couple minutes. I am back. So I think the one last thing I need to do is understand how... And I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it like right now in this show. But understand how all these levels connect. Because I get kind of lost. Like there's so many connection points, which is very cool. It's cool that there's connection points. But I need to know and write down like which chambers connect to which chambers. So I know that like 319, for example, right here, that 319 connects to 318. Right? So that's really one big level. I guess the Cackling Caverns is all one big level. But then 329... For example, that connects to the River Styx area. What the hell's on that other side? Damon2M says, I can give you a write-up. Awesome. If you would send me a write-up, that'd be great. So like, I guess this is the other side of the Cackling Chasm. And that looks like it's independent of... Yeah, send it to me a Discord, would be great. And that would be... And then that's independent of the Black River. And the Black River is what's connected to the other place. So this is Cackling Chasm over here. It's interesting to like try to connect all these places together and see what connects to what, because yeah, I think a lot of these maps connect, and the connection points between the maps is buried in all of the descriptions of every other room too. So that's, I just need to like this is really handy. But this only shows like where a couple of the maps are connected. Is it showing different ways you can connect them? Looks like it is. Black River Extension map is in two sections, so it can be cut in half and arranged in four ways. In fact, when you combine with the main Black River map sections, you actually have 20 different layouts to choose from. Choose a layout you like. We recommend using layout 1 attached to the downriver side of the main map, but feel free to do something different if you prefer. The expansion maps can connect directly. So they even give you like a let the river go in any direction you want. So that's kind of interesting. Ooh, look, Shoggoth. And then the Howling Halls is the lowest level. So I just need to spend some time to get all of to understand how all of them lay out. And the reason I need to do that is because like the players are going to be like, well, which way should we go? Like, especially when you drop in if we go all the way back up to the caverns that we were. If we go all the way back to the caverns that we're running now, I think there's two different paths they can take, and they're significantly different paths in one room. Like when they get to the, yeah. So when they get to 317, for example, they can go down this hole, which goes down into the Darrow area. That goes to the Bat Caves, right? And it's the only way to get to the Bat Caves. And then they have a 318, which goes to the surface, but also connects to, as they say, tunnels carved out by dwarves and owlbears long ago, dark, blah, 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 blah. A sturdy door set into the south wall of the tunnel, a couple dozen paces beyond this chamber, leads to area 319 in Cackling Caverns. So there's this big long thing that goes up to the surface, but also, I don't know if I'm going to have that go to this. Well, except again, how do the owlbears get up there? Because we have that stairwell. I don't know if they'll care, but they already have the stairwell. And I don't want to be like, oh yeah, you got two different places that go like 20 feet away from each other. So I think I might just have the stairwell be the way to get to level 3, and then they can make their way down here once they've either dealt with or allied with or whatever they've done with the Trollkin. And then 319 goes here, and this connects to the River Styx area. 329, right, connects to the River Styx. Stream flowing past this shrine is a small branch of the Black River that flows through level 5. In a world where spatial relationships make sense, the shrine is about 120 feet above the level of the Black River, but the Black River isn't simply flowing water, it's a current of magic. If the characters travel along this branch somehow, they'd have to swim, fly, or make a raft from scavenged material. The boat on this shrine is part of the statue. Aha, so you can't use it. It links up with the Black River somewhere near the portion shown on the level 5 maps. There's no sensation descending 120 feet. As far as the rafters are concerned, it's a flat trip. The length can be whatever you choose. Alternatively, if the characters explore this stretch of water but you don't want them on level 5 yet, after some length of time in the water they arrive back at the shrine. They might come back the opposite direction, so you can have it sort of circle around. So I guess the intent isn't necessarily that that's how they get to the Black River, and I guess instead they get to the Black River through the Bat Cave. Is that right? This is the Bat Cave area, right? Yeah, Bat Caverns. So they get through the back. They can get to the Bat Caverns by going down that hole, which I think they said is the only way in. Except they also can get through the Oubliette up above, because they've done that before. So there's a couple different ways. And this connection, so that, let's see. This looks like the eastern half of the map. It also did not help me that they're changing the, these stairs make a 90-degree turn as they descend eventually up in the Gellert's landing area, 501. So there is 411. Let's take a look at that. So many connections. Yeah, so there's stairwells down here that go down to Gellert's area in 501. So they can make their way down there. But I think there's another half to the Bat Cave area. That's this half. But that doesn't connect. It doesn't look like, I don't see any connections here that connect anything. But that's where Immorta is. And then 5. And then this is where we get to the actual river. And these are the two different, yeah. So I definitely need to spend some time at least joining these maps together in Owlbear Rodeo so I can get a feeling for how they all connect. Because there's a lot of interconnections between all of these maps. And it's easy to get lost. And the reason why, like, they're not even close to, like, getting all this far this way down, but I need to kind of know where things are because they're going to want to say, like, well, how do we get down there, and what do we do? One thing that occurs to me as well is I mentioned that Immorta the Debased probably has the other thing, but I don't think she does. I think that the other two elements of the Weird Weaver are that crazy undead twisted creature from the Far Realm or whatever the hell it is, and then Gellert's Sphere of Annihilation. That those are the other two. So Immorta doesn't have. I think this is a secret. Immorta travels among levels of the Scarlet Citadel, serving Gellert's needs and liaisoning with the inhabitants of these other levels. Logic and reason start to break down the lower you go in the Scarlet Citadel. 4, 8. Two more secrets. What are other things that they might learn? Factions of Darrow war with one another in the lower levels. That's one. They already know that there's like many connections. That there's many connections to the surface in the lower levels. Any other big secret? I can't really think of one. Yeah, I think we're good. We'll go with 9 secrets today. Something will come up, I'm sure. So friends, do I feel totally prepared? No, I feel good enough. Like I've got some good strong scenes here. I think like they're going to have a nice conversation with Les Baskalag. They're going to face Kagath Zee and then they're going to make their way into level 3. And I can probably wing the first two I'm pretty set on. And then I can wing the rest of it and probably fill out a session. And then what I really need to do is do more homework between now and next week, reading in on Scarlet Citadel, seeing how the interconnections go, and making sure that there is enough information for the players to make meaningful choices about the directions that they're going to head when they go in. I don't want them wandering aimlessly. I want them to have reason. Like, why do they need to get a hold of Immorta the Debase? Like, why must they find her? You know, how does that help her? And then how do they get to the areas where they can do that? I think that's a question. But making sure that they have enough information to choose different paths, because you don't want them skipping big sections of the dungeon if they you want them to have reason to go to all the directions that they're going. So maybe it's like picking up certain quests. Maybe it's, you know, having keyed doors. Maybe there are keyed doors already. Maybe I just forgot. So we'll see. But I think I've got enough for today. And thus, we are going to call today's show over. So I want to thank everybody for hanging out with me today while I prepared for my Scarlet Citadel game. If you enjoyed this show and you want more content like this, please sign up for the Sly Flourish newsletter. You get a free adventure generator PDF and you get a weekly RPG-related article sent directly to your inbox. You can find a link to that in the show notes below. You can join the Sly Flourish Patreon. You get access to the City of Arches sourcebook, a bunch of exclusive adventures, a dedicated Discord channel, the monthly Q&A, but most of all, you help me put on shows like this. If you want to join the Patreon, you can find a link to that in the show notes below. And finally, you can pick up any of my books, including Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master, The Lazy DM's Companion, and The Lazy DM's Workbook, all available on the Sly Flourish bookstore, also linked in the show notes below. Thank you all very much. Have a great day, and get out there and play an RPG.